you're a parent with young children, you'll be familiar with the childcare equation. It's where you try to work out your best work and home arrangements, basically to decide if both parents should go to work and for what mix of days, and what childcare is required and how much that costs compared to what you're earning. While it's an equation that's usually seen the cost of childcare weighed up against the lower wage, is this always actually the best way to look at things? Samantha Page is the CEO of Early Childhood Australia. Samantha, what are the main things that go into that decision about who goes out to work and therefore how much childcare is needed?
Yes, well, it is often a decision based on the earning capacity of the parent who has taken parental leave. And I think that's unfortunate, actually. It should be considered in the context of the household income and also both parents' future career path and capacity to earn long term and superannuation and other things. But often that's a bit overwhelming, and the immediate decision might be based on the cost of care versus the cost of one parent who's been out of the workforce for a while returning to work.
Yeah. Dr. Elizabeth Hill is an economist at the University of Sydney. She joins us too. Her research focuses on the political economy of gender, work and childcare. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Amanda.
And what does your research say are the main factors affecting this childcare equation?
Well, we know from a lot of the research that it's what's offered in someone's workplace that also shapes this this decision about who will work and how much they'll work. So firstly, relative wages of individual household members becomes an important factor, and that's where the gender pay gap really plays into decisions that our households are making, where women on average tend to earn less than men on average. There's also the kinds of workplace policies that are available, whether or not one or both has access to flexible working options that might kind of help them manage their work and care lives. Also the type of parental leave policy, so how long that parental leave policy might be, what proportion is paid, at what level. That also comes into the calculation about whether or not there's going to be a gap between paid parental leave and then access to childcare. And of course, the really important thing is, what are the household's income needs? How much does a household actually have to earn to cover mortgage repayments and other things? So the workplace is a really key informer of the childcare calculation, but so is the kind of unpaid care that might be available. So particularly things like grandparents. Do your grandparents live nearby? Are they interested and willing to do some childcare? Are they still working? Are they wanting to cut back their work? Do they have access to flexible working hours that can help them support a family's childcare? And then, of course, there's the paid care options, whether or not what's available, what's where it's available. That's often a big influence on what kind of paid care people use, the hours that they're open, and, of course, the really niggly one, the cost of care. So those things all come together to, in a very complex way, to shape the kinds of decisions that Australian households make about how to work out these trade-offs between wage work, unpaid care and paid care.
And Samantha, with childcare often still seen as an expense that's justified against the lower wage earner, which is often a female parent, is the thinking still that this wage needs to be high enough to, you know, not only cover the childcare but to justify working?
Yes, I think that's a common thought. And also, I think often families are looking at the cost of childcare in terms of the fee the service is charging without really understanding how much subsidy they might receive from the government to bring that cost down. And we've been talking to the government for some time now about making it easier for families to run some scenarios and test some options that they might have in order to understand the net outcome, i.e. what they'll be out of pocket after the government subsidies are taken into account. At the moment, that's not very easy for families to do.
Of course, Elizabeth, some might be listening to this thinking, well, surely the parent who earns the most should work more. That makes common sense financially. Economically, what's your response to that line of thinking?
Yeah, this gets back to the issue that Sam raised. Households tend to sit around their kitchen tables and make very short-term decisions. You know, it's a very pressing issue. How do we resolve this as quickly as possible? But the research shows that that's a really... It's quite a dangerous way of thinking about the childcare calculation, given that it has such a significant impact on women's and households' long-term financial security. So we know that if you take a life course approach to this, you'll be thinking about women and men's or the both partners, their career progression, the impact on taking some time out of the workforce or only being attached in a part-time capacity, the impact on long-term career progression, the impact on wages, and of course the most important thing, the impact on superannuation and the likelihood of being able to live comfortably in your retirement. So These are things in the research we see that there's a very strong motherhood penalty when the calculation is made solely against the lower earning, often the woman's wage, and therefore she will return kind of later and have a more intermittent attachment to the labour market. That plays out really negatively in terms of lifetime wages and therefore access to adequate superannuation down the track. And on the flip side, the research shows very strongly a fatherhood premium, that when men have kids, they work longer and they earn more and their careers really do very well. So there's a real inequality that emerges out of that calculation. And I think it's really significant at the moment because we've got an Australian female workforce that is more highly educated than ever. And yet we're still seeing these same kinds of decisions often playing out where we've moved away from a sole male breadwinner to more of a kind of a one and a half household where you've got a full-time wage supplemented by a part-time wage. This is a very Australian phenomenon that really reflects our particular attitudes about what makes for a good father and what makes for a good mother.
Well, Samantha, let's talk a bit more about some of those factors beyond the finances of it. I'm thinking about, so Liz has mentioned, for example, career development and how that's affected by staying in or getting out of the workforce, your self-esteem also. And I'm wondering too about your contribution to society, I suppose. You might not be earning all that much money, but you might be doing a good job in the world, So there's some other potential factors.
Well, that's right. And women do make an enormous contribution through volunteering roles, as we know. But that longer-term financial security, I just wanted to say, particularly pertinent in society where we know that approximately one in three marriages will break down. And while nobody wants to be thinking about that when they're making decisions about returning to work, that impacts significantly on women who have taken long periods of time out of the workforce, have lower workforce engagement and lower superannuation, as Liz mentioned. But in terms of the other factors for parents to consider, it's not just the parents' connection and participation in society, but it's also children's opportunity to participate and be in quality settings with other children. And certainly from the age of three onwards, there's very solid evidence that children will benefit from that, that they'll benefit not only from the rich learning experiences that childhood services can provide, but particularly from being in play-based learning situations with other children the same age. And that's a great way for children to develop those social and emotional skills, cognitive development, resilience and confidence as learners that prepare them for a smooth transition to school. So parents certainly take into account what they think their children, where they think their children will be better off and what's in their best interests.
Well, Elizabeth, just coming back to the working patterns of parents too, are fathers wanting to work more part-time so they can spend time at home with the kids?
Mm. There's an emerging body of literature and research on this, but because our time use, the Australian Time Use Survey hasn't been run for quite a long time, we don't have the really hard data that we need. We do know that policy has been developing in a way, in small ways, to try and provide opportunities for men to engage more in home life, in childcare, in domestic life, the right to request a change in working hours, the dad and partner pay, part of the national paid parental leave scheme. But we do know from the available research that not many men tend to ask for that and request those access to those policies. And we also know that when they do, they're often refused. So there's still a workplace culture that does perceive ideas of flexibility and parental leave as more of a kind of woman's right than a father's right. So that's something that really needs to change. I think it's quite specific to the Australian context. We're finding it really difficult to shift that. But at the same time, existing time use survey data does show us that men, Australian men, are increasingly engaged in child-related duties, but not so much in the regular housework. So there's still a very large gap there between men and women and the total amount of unpaid domestic work. And this doesn't change very much. It changes for women according to how much work they do in the paid labour force, but it doesn't change very much for men. So, you know, we really need a fresh round of time use data to really test and to find out what's been going on in the last kind of 10 years for Australian men.
Samantha, we have a text that's come in that I might get you to comment on if you could. And this person asks, what about the decision when children with disabilities are involved? The cost of childcare is $100,000 more than typical families over the school age years. Can you comment on that at all?
I'm surprised at that figure. Early childhood services are bound by anti-discrimination law and pride themselves on being inclusive environments, and that includes the outside school hours services that run before and after school and during vocation care. So I would encourage any family who has a child with additional needs to talk to local services about children accessing those services right alongside any other child, and accessing the same government subsidies that are available to other families.
Well, let's hear from another one of our listeners, Russell Miles, who sent us a voice memo, and it's about how he and his partner juggled the early childhood years when they were raising kids in the 1980s and 90s and both working.
She was a nurse and would return from night shift to take the children to creche and school. I would then pick them up on the way home from work at night. The house alternated between clean, boy clean, and disorder. I stored children's clothes in a bookcase as I could visually identify what was there, what had been left at childcare, and what might still fit. But negotiations? We were too busy for such frivolities. You just did. I avoided phone calls from my boss. My boss fortunately had a nonna. I think every family needs a nonna. It was really ships in the night and a stupid way to live. My mate did it much better. He and his wife worked part-time. By the time you factor in childcare fees, taxes, etc., they had about the same take-home pay. And they were happier.
And thanks, Russell, for that voice memo. Here in Life Matters, it'd be good to hear from you too about how you've decided whether it's worth both parents working outside the home, and if not, how you've worked out the split. You can get in touch on Facebook. Let's talk now about the latest changes to the childcare subsidies. Samantha Page is the CEO of Early Childhood Australia. Sam, parents of young children will be aware that as of this week, the childcare subsidies have changed. How does the system now work differently?
Yes, we are a bit worried about the I think it's approximately 15% of parents that haven't realised that it's changed, but hopefully they'll get onto it really soon. So what the government has done is replaced the previous system of childcare benefit and childcare rebate with one single childcare subsidy. What I think some parents don't realise is they have to reapply to receive that subsidy. There's no automatic transition. And that's because the new subsidy system has an activity test that applies to both parents, and it's a bit, quite a bit stricter than the previous activity test that applied to childcare rebate.
And so activity
parents need
means
to provide more information.
Yeah, activity, so activity means working or studying.
Yes, or volunteering. Mm-hmm. So parents need to be able to provide the information about their work patterns or their study and volunteering activities in order to meet that activity test. And then it's a three-step test. So there are three levels of
eligibility. Who benefits most from these changes, Sam?
Yeah, so three quarters of families currently using childcare will be better off under the new subsidy as long as they can demonstrate regular activity. So as long as their work is stable, their hours are reasonably stable, and they can meet the requirements of that activity test, the rate of subsidy they receive will be more generous and they should be better off overall. Approximately a quarter of families will be worse off under the new subsidy system.
And who are they?
Yeah, they fall into two main groups. So the first group that are most negatively affected are the ones that can't meet the activity test. So that might be because they don't have regular work or aren't engaged in study. They might have health or mental health issues, or they might just work in an industry where work isn't available at the moment, or work is casual contract-based and they can't maintain regular hours. Those families are the families we're most concerned about. The other families that will miss out are the higher income families where their rate of subsidy has been reduced to 20%. And then for families over $340,000 a year, approximately, their subsidy is cut out altogether. And, you know, I hear the commentary that people say, well, that's fair enough, they're earning a high income. But often, back to the issue we were talking about in the very beginning, not both parents are high income earners. One parent might be a high income earner. For the other parent, justifying that decision to return to the workforce just became a lot harder. And also, our argument would be that there is an economic value in continuing to invest in the childcare subsidy to keep children in quality regulated settings and encourage people to make decisions about workforce participation rather than cutting those families off. But nonetheless, we're not the government. So the design of the subsidy system is very much targeted on those middle income families where both parents are in regular work.
Elizabeth Hill at Sydney University, what about for working single parents?
Yes, well, they've always had it much tougher and not much has changed there. The activity test has always been there for them as well. And of course, they have much fewer supports to rely on relative to a couple family that can kind of divide the work and divide the care. So they're certainly not benefiting in any kind of new way from the new childcare subsidy scheme.
Right. All right. Well, look, thank you both for taking us through the bigger picture and the changed picture. Elizabeth Hill is a political economist at the University of Sydney. Thank you very much, Liz.
No problem. Thanks, Amanda.
And Samantha Page is the CEO of Early Childhood Australia. Thanks, Sam.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And do let us know how you've worked out the childcare equation in your household. How have you decided whether it's worth both parents working, if there are two of you, and how the new changes in childcare subsidies may have influenced that? You can let us know on Facebook. You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith.